You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Welcome to Ladies of Liberty. And I don't usually do this at the beginning of our shows, but today I'm going to introduce our hosts, and then you're going to see why. So today with us, we have Robin Hilton. And Robin Hilton lives in Virginia, and she's a mom and a grandmother. And, you know, she's a world and political observer. So she does the greatest job that any woman or any family could have in the world, that of being a mom. I love that. We also have myself, Linda Martinelli, and I am a business owner, entrepreneur, and also the host, along with my wonderful husband, Dr. Ron Martinelli, of Talking While Married, right here on America Out Loud every weeknight at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then we have Mallory Millett. And Mallory Millett today is going to be a force to be reckoned with here, because Mallory has a lot of experience in Afghanistan. And what we're going to be talking about is the mess that the United States has made in Afghanistan, the absolute human tragedy that has been caused to the people of Afghanistan by an irresponsible pullout of our troops. We're not discussing right at this moment whether we should have pulled troops out at any time, but certainly not the way that it happened. I think we can all agree to that. So Mallory, I'm going to let you get started because you have a history with Afghanistan we all need to hear about.
Well, thank you, Linda. Yes, I'm very happy to finally be able to spread my story of my experiences in Afghanistan a little farther than just my friends and family, because this was really quite something. In 1967, I was living in Manila with my since annulled husband, who was at the time, he was president of 3M Company Asia, and we lived in Manila. So my marriage had completely crumbled, and I was 12,000 miles from home. And my mother was on her way to visit me. She was on a round-the-world trip, and she had stopped in Afghanistan to spend most of that year with my sister, Sally. Now, Sally's husband was Air Force Colonel Edward Rao, who was living with her and their four children in Afghanistan because he was the air attaché at the American Embassy in Kabul. He was the commanding officer of a KC-135, which is the mid-air fueling plane for the atom bomb, which carried the B-52. He belonged to something called Strategic Air Command, SAC, where they had B-52s in the air 24 hours a day constantly, and they had these KC-135s refueling them in the air. Some of you may have seen that the spectacular view of the one plane fueling the other plane, you know, 20,000 feet in the air. And my brother-in-law, Ed Rao, was an aircraft commander of one of those KC-135s. So he had been given the choice of going to Vietnam or Kabul, Afghanistan, as an air attaché. And since they had the four children, he chose to be in non-combat. He didn't really want to risk getting killed and losing, having his children lose their dad. So my mother was arriving in Afghanistan to visit them, and I wrote to my sister Sally to warn mother that Ron and I were now separated so that she wouldn't be so shocked when she arrived in Southeast Asia. So Sally wrote back and demanded that I come there. "You come here and tell her yourself," she said. So it's completely, you know, as,
just like a sister.
And it's my sister, Sally. And as clueless as I was, I just took off for Kabul, Afghanistan. I had no idea what I was getting into. And so I went off with my baby to spend the greater part of 1967 in Kabul with all of them. We lived in a four-story house in a secured compound with a huge yard that was just mostly dirt. because Afghanistan is just the moon. I mean, it's just all dirt and rocks. So we were in this big compound, and we had a four-story house, and we had the kids had a pony in the yard. That was about the most exciting thing that they had, was that pony. So I stayed in that house for a long time, most of 1967. I spent a lot of time in that embassy, which is now being overrun with barbarians. I have to say that there's nothing more barbaric than Afghanistan. You can try to imagine barbarism, but you just really don't know what it means to go back to the Stone Age until you've actually been there, after living in places like, you know, Hong Kong and Manila in America. You know, it was just really shocking. First of all, I had to spend 3 weeks in Delhi waiting for a visa. I thought I was just going to arrive in Delhi and get a visa, but they made it almost impossible for me to get one. So I'm perched in this moldy hotel room in New Delhi, alone with a 2.5-year-old blonde, blue-eyed baby girl, clutching her to my bosom. I was afraid to take my eyes off for five minutes, because when you're in a place like New Delhi, a child like that, a kidnapped child, little girl like that, is worth $1 million, flat out. That's how much somebody could get for her, sell her into slavery. So I was really traumatized having to wait those 21 days. I thought I was just going to get a visa and go. So anyway, I finally get news from the Afghan embassy that I'm going to be picked up by some people and taken to where I can get a visa. So I'm picked up by this carload of Afghan men. All, you know, Afghan men are all like 6'5". They are the tallest people you've ever seen in your life. They're all so tall. So these huge men came and picked me up in a car, and I think there were 3 or 4 of them. So we were all kind of cramped in this car. I have my baby girl on my lap. I'm absolutely terrified. These men are all in tribal garb. They're tribal men. And they drive me out way, way out into the desert. We drove for a good nearly 2 hours. I didn't know where I was being taken. I was positively trembling in terror. I didn't know what was happening to me. Then they arrived at this enormous tent. These people build tents that are the size of buildings. So they bring me into this huge tent where there are different rooms, and they finally give me a visa, and then we drive me all the way back to New Delhi, and I'm able to leave to go to Kabul.
Wow.
So I get onto a DC-6, which is a propeller-driven plane. You know, I had never ridden anything but jets. Suddenly, I'm in a propeller plane flying from New Delhi to Kabul, which is a very, 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 very long trip over treacherous territory. I mean, you look down for ever and ever and ever, and there's nothing there. I was so afraid that plane would crash. Nobody would ever find us in 100 years. It was a terrifying flight. But it was also fascinating, because Afghanistan is like the moon. It really is like the moon, except that there were these flocks of sheep. Now, when I think back in my memory, I can't understand what these sheep were grazing on. I don't quite get how this all worked. But there were these flocks of sheep, and they dye all the sheep a different color. So there would be a pink flock of sheep. And this is like zillions of sheep moving across the terrain. It was such a stunning view from the airplane. And then there would be a sky blue flock of sheep, and then an apple green flock of sheep, and all these different purple sheep, different flocks. And that's how you identified your flock. So somebody couldn't steal any of your sheep. You'd know right away that they had your pink sheep. You know, it was just
That's a really interesting idea that they did that.
Yeah. So anyway, we're flying across this incredibly rocky, mountainous dirt terrain, just really relentlessly like that. And there was a man, a Sikh. A Sikh is a sect in India where the men grow their hair way down past their waist, you know, and they wrap it around their head with a big turban. This is an Indian, I think it's a Muslim sect. And there was this, that man whose name was Harry, was on the plane, and he and Kristen befriended each other, my little 2.5-year-old daughter. And Kristen and Harry spent the whole airplane flight, you know, drawing pictures and laughing and playing games. And it was a charming experience. And then as we arrived in Kabul airport, and I looked down, there was this little airport, and there were these five circles of faces. Seven circles of faces looking up at me. I looked down, and there were these seven circles of white faces looking up, and that was my family. It was such a strange and thrilling sight to see those five or those seven circles. It was just adorable. And we lived in this four-story house and with the in the compound with the pony. And that was my entry into hell. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Afghanistan is hell. I don't have any idea why people are living there. It's absolutely uninhabitable. There's no reason. I've got my own little private theory that every other country around there takes their most incorrigible kids from all the different villages and throws them into Afghanistan and abandons them or something, because these are all just very, very, very aggressive, unusual people. It's a country of tribalism. Now, my sister Kate, who did all the mischief with the National Organization of Women and establishing the women's studies classes in the all the colleges and universities and that, Kate Millett, who was very famous for doing this, Kate was married to a Japanese man, my sister, for 17 years. And he used to walk around the house mumbling, "It's all about the tribalism. It's all about the tribalism." And I really didn't quite get what he was talking about until I came to Afghanistan. But tribalism is really the far, far end of the spectrum of civilization. It's as far down the ladder as you can get. Because when you have tribalism, you have to think of like Cherokee, Apache, Iroquois, you know, these are people who are all in constant war with each other. They are always at war. They are always arguing over territory and animals and women. And the problem with tribalism is that when you get caught within your own tribe and you cannot cross-fertilize, you can't have new blood coming into your tribe, then it becomes this incestuous thing where people are actually having babies with their mothers, with their cousins, with their brothers and sisters. This is the kind of thing that Americans just can't even feature. You know, they think you're making it up when you're saying these kinds of things. No, this is what happens in tribalism. People are having babies with their brothers and sisters. And it's not good. And even these people who are as ill-educated as they are and as ill-experienced in the world as they are, they figure this out after a while, that the product of having a baby with your brother doesn't generally turn out so well. So they need fresh blood desperately. That this is the thing they really, really need. So one of the ways that these tribes make their living and also that they cross pollinate with each other is that they specialize in kidnapping and ransom. Kidnapping is a kind of a, you know, a big business in Afghanistan, because if you can kidnap a 15-year-old girl from some other tribe, then you can get like 10 kids out of this girl, 5 kids out of this girl. You've really scored. So this is the essence of the burqa. The burqa is because, first of all, there's just the basic thing of tribalism and the kidnapping. But second of all, the Afghan men are the most rapacious men on earth. They are rapists. They are rape artists. They rape women constantly. This is not unusual to them. It's not bad to them. Women have no value whatsoever. And so, therefore, you can do whatever you want with them. So, the different Afghan tribal women, they want the burqa too. You know, when we look at this from America, we tend to say, oh, look at how badly the women are treated and they're forced to wear these big black tents from head to toe and how what a terrible thing. And the men are doing this to them. what a terrible thing the men are doing to them. But this is not what it is. The women want this. The women demand this. They are the objects of kidnapping night and day. They are in danger of this happening to them and being taken into an enemy tribe. And if you have a woman skirting around the village in a black burqa from head to toe, you don't know if she's 80 years old and toothless or if she's a fertile 14-year-old who can give you 10 children. So the burqa is a very important form of protection. The women, they demand that their daughters be burqa'd. From the minute they began to menstruate, they have to wear a burqa. And this is just the way it is. And if you all were Afghan women, you'd be demanding it also, because you don't want to be kidnapped and you don't want your daughters kidnapped and raped. So this is a very, very important aspect that nobody has gotten out. There isn't one single person who's mentioned this and told this fact about life in Afghanistan.
Mallory, I have a question there, if I can ask it. So just on the news, I heard that the men are killing women right now that are not wearing burqas. And so if it's the women that want them to wear them, then why are the men killing them?
Well, men always kill at the behest of women. Men kill in wars because they're protecting their women. It's the women. Look, Linda, the one thing I've really learned living all over the world is it doesn't matter what society you live in. The women run the society. When I swear to God, if all the women in Afghanistan got together and decided no more burqas, in less than a year, there'd be no more burqas. This is, you know, the mother-in-law in every household is the queen of that house. She runs the house. She runs the wives of her sons. And these women are very tough. Now, one of the things about the Afghans is that they are some of the cruelest people. I have never been around such cruelty in my life. They are absolutely indescribably cruel. And the only thing that they ever find funny, the only thing I ever saw Afghans laughing at was viciousness and cruelty. They find it hilarious. When they play polo, they have a game that's a form of polo over there, and they use the head of an enemy. That's what they use for their polo ball. One time we were driving through the bazaar or around the bazaar. We had just been to the bazaar and we were driving home, but it was somewhere near the big bazaar. And suddenly we saw this huge ring of men. There were maybe 300 or 400 men, at least that many, all around in a huge circle. They were all around something and they were laughing so hard. They were slapping their thighs and laughing and slapping each other's backs and just getting such a kick out of something. And we all said to the driver, the Afghan driver, let's get over there. What's going on? What's so funny? And we got up much closer. And what we discovered was that a man had been moving, I don't know, it was a big animal. I can't remember now if it was some sort of ox or a camel. It was an enormous animal. I'm not remembering exactly what type. But he had a rope that he was guiding the animal with. And the animal had started to pull against him in such a way, and the rope had gotten wound around his thumb, and the rope had ripped his thumb off. And this man was standing in the middle of this circle of hundreds of other men, holding up his excruciating, agonized thumb with the blood just pouring out of it in such agony. And these people thought it was the funniest thing they ever saw in their lives. No one moved to help him. Nobody closed that distance from the center of the circle where he was to the ring of the circle of people. Nobody crossed that space for a second to come and aid him, to help him, to do anything, any sort of mercy at all. It was just the most hilarious thing they ever saw. And that was typical of what goes on there. I mean, it's just, I can't even begin to tell you. The whole concept of mercy and true compassion and all of that is just completely absent as far as I could witness the whole time that I was there. Now, I was never allowed out of the compound except if I was being escorted in some way. I couldn't drive a car. if I did go anywhere, and I never went alone in a car, but if I did go anywhere, it was in a car, usually with my brother-in-law or something, and an Afghan driver. So I would just sit in the back seat of this car, and I would look out the window and see these burqa women skirting around the edges of life. They would never actually, they had such a weird way of moving about, surreptitiously, as if they didn't want to be noticed and as if they were so inferior. Their whole way of moving inside that burqa was so stirring and so deeply upsetting to me. When I would think of how a lovely woman would walk down Fifth Avenue and feeling very, you know, good about herself and having enjoying the day or something, these women were surreptitiously, you know, scooting around as if they didn't belong anywhere. And I would sit in the back seat of the car and just weep. I would just have tears pouring down my cheeks, looking at these poor women. It was really just not to be believed. I spent a lot of time in the American embassy that they're now all in, carrying on, who knows what they're doing in that embassy. I'm going through such hell over what I'm seeing go on there, because this was completely and totally unnecessary. This could have been done correctly. It could have been done right. And actually, I'm one of those people who thinks we never should have gone into Afghanistan anyway, because, you know, there's never been, since Alexander the Great, there has never been no one has ever won a war in Afghanistan. No one. It's never happened since Alexander. Never. Because these people, this is all they do, is they, you know, they kidnap, they do ransom, then they fight. They're great fighters, these Taliban people, these Afghan tribals. They're brilliant fighters, and it's just best not to get into anything with them at all. Now, we had to go and get our supplies in Pakistan. So that meant we would take a whole day where we would drive from Kabul across all this wild terrain. I'd be in the car with my sister and her husband and my mother and I, and the kids would all be back at the house, and we would drive across this moonscape, this wild, terrible atmosphere of nothingness and desolation. It's so depressing. And when I first arrived, it was in August, and it was so hot. You can't imagine how hot it was. Those women under those burqas, sweltering under those burqas. So anyway, we go across all this desolate land, and we go up through the Hindu Kush, which is the passway to get from Kabul into Pakistan. So we would go up through the Hindu Kush and go into Pakistan and do our shopping. Now, what was so incredible, and this is something that I've tried to describe to people, and I just don't think there are any words to adequately describe how strange this was to experience, but you're driving up through the Hindu Kush, which is, you know, it's steep Himalayas, you know, you're in the Himalayas, and it's a wild, rugged mountain range, and you're going through this pass, you're going through all these different areas of the mountain, and if you'd stop the car, if we would stop the car to do something, mainly if you stopped, there would be no one there. It was wild, wild land. It was nothing. There were no human beings. There were no structures that indicated human beings were anywhere. No tents, no buildings, no villages, no nothing. Absolutely desolate, unpopulated, empty, empty. And yet, if you stopped the car for 30 seconds, 20 people would suddenly appear. 20 6-foot-6 tall tribal men, with those big round, those things around their heads, you know. I mean, you could not figure out where these people came from. There was as if they, it absolutely was as if they materialized out of the ether. And then once we would start driving again, they would all disappear. We don't know where they came from. We don't know where, but then if you would stop again, another, you know, 10 people would emerge from somewhere. It was the strangest thing. My whole life, I've never been able to understand this phenomenon. Where they spent their time, where did they come from, where did they go back to? Because there was absolutely nothing there. It was just, incredibly strange. So anyway, it was a very unpleasant time for me. I really must say that I loathed every moment that I was in Afghanistan. The terrain is impossible. The climate is impossible. There were functions happening at the embassy now and then, but I spent most of my time there reading and playing with the children and riding. Everybody was riding the pony and all of that stuff. But that gets a little old, you know. You're there for months and there's just nothing going on, you know, and no relief from anything. There's very little entertainment. My sister, the thing of it is, everybody there smokes a hookah. You know, this whole idea that this is what it is to live in a third world country, is that nobody goes to jail. They have all these laws. They've got 8 million laws and everything is illegal, and particularly hashish or marijuana or heroin. Now, they have huge poppy crops. It's their single largest product that comes out of Afghanistan is poppies, which are the basis of heroin. So they're happily growing all these billions of acres of poppies, and the people are all smoking it. It's supposed to be, when I was there, it was supposed to be the punishment for smoking hashish was death, which is just laughable because everybody was smoking it.
Listen to the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
AmericaOutloud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is the McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutloud.com.
Welcome back to Ladies of Liberty. We're going to continue with Mallory's story, and we're going to move on to today and what's happening in Afghanistan as well.
Okay, so eventually my mother and my little girl and I left Tehran. Thank God, I've never been happier in my life. And we were flying to Hong Kong because I lived in Manila. I also lived in Hong Kong. I had an apartment there and I had a house in Manila, but we were going to my house in Manila. And in those days, to get from Kabul to Hong Kong, which is, you know, you're flying east from Kabul to Hong Kong, you had to actually get in a plane and fly west, almost the same distance it would get to go the opposite way in Hong Kong, to Tehran. You had to fly all the way from Kabul to Tehran to be able to get a plane to go back to Hong Kong. So my mother and daughter and I arrived in Tehran, and we went to the hotel where we had engaged for the one night that we were going to be there. And we walk into the lobby of our hotel, which is, I mean, Tehran is a huge, teeming, enormous city, you know. We walk into this hotel, and who's in the hotel lobby but Harry, the Sikh. Harry, the man who took the plane from Delhi to Kabul with us.
Oh, wow.
This is months and months. This is a long time later. We walk into the hotel, and there is Harry. And at the time, we were just marveling at what a coincidence this was. What on earth was Harry doing there? And we all had this big, you know, reunion. And my daughter was thrilled to see Harry because they had had so much fun on the plane. And then Harry just took us up, adopted us, and took us all over Tehran, gave us the grand tour of Tehran, took us to the great the mosque there, which is gorgeous, and I got to see Tehran in 1967, which was under the Shah, and I had just come from this place that had been like Tehran before the Shah. I had just come from this Stone Age place, and now I'm in Tehran, and there are all these young, happy Iranian people. The boys and girls are holding hands. The girls are wearing blue jeans and working in ad agencies. They're absolutely having a ball experiencing democracy and freedom. It was the most elated. I've never been in a city that was so elated. Forget Paris, forget any other place on earth. My mother and I walked around the city of Tehran just thrilled over how happy these people were. So, first of all, they're the most gorgeous people in the world, these Iranian people. They all look like movie stars, and they were all laughing and happy and slender and healthy, and they were, you know, holding hands and walking arm in arm with their boyfriends. And it was just freedom. And it was the most fabulous, fabulous feeling, you know, to experience this. My mother and I were saying, just think, people in New York are walking around, you know, like something out of the Volga boatmen, you know, like slaves going to the oars, you know, and they're living in the freest country in the world. And here, these people in Iran are still Muslims, and they're just, I never saw such happy people, and I never saw such a happy place. So that when the Shah was brought down, I was, you know, deeply in mourning. Really, it was a terrible, terrible experience to watch that happen. When we got on the plane in Kabul and we were going to leave, I took up my sandals. You know how Jesus says, when you leave a place that's bad, take off your sandals and shake the dust from your sandals and never go back. So I ceremoniously took my sandals off and shook them in the aisle of the plane. My mother said, what are you doing? I said, I'm shaking this place off because thank God, we're never going to have to deal with these people again in our lives. And little did I ever suspect that in 2020, well, in 2001, that we'd be bombed by them. And then that, you know, that we'd be going through what we're going through. And now I know they're going to be coming across our southern border. I'm going to definitely have to be dealing with these barbarians, and it is not a happy thought.
So today we have the human tragedy that's been created by the pullout of our troops. And it's not really a discussion of should we or shouldn't we have. I think most people agree that we needed to be out of Afghanistan, but the way that we did it caused horrific chaos, and the Taliban has taken over again, and all of the progress that was made is going backwards. There's a whole generation of people in Afghanistan that have never lived any other way than when America was there with our troops and was doing things like getting women educated. They could go to school, they could have jobs. This has all changed. Robin, what's your thoughts on what you see going on today in Afghanistan?
this is a total disaster. I mean, they haven't been gone 2 weeks and it's total chaos. It's beyond a travesty to see what these women and children are going to have to live with. I can't even imagine. I know I wouldn't want to my children to live like that. I mean, the fear in those women's eyes that you see on the video that you see of them all trying to run at the airport, passing their children over, trying to get them out of there. I couldn't do that. I couldn't pass my children over to someone knowing if they're going to make it out or not.
Well, I think that's real desperation. So
Mallory,
we're fast forwarded a number of years since you lived there, and things changed when our troops went in, right? And they changed for the 20 years that we've been there. Although it doesn't seem like the people changed very much. And now here we are with the chaos of today. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I just before we got on this call with each other, I was watching an American general bloviating on BBC about how prepared we are. We have the 82nd Airborne Division headquarters and a brigade of 82nd Airborne Division. We have 3 airborne infantry battalions and associated enablers. We have an infantry battalion from the 10th Mountain Division securing the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, also operating on the ground with a variety of special operations forces in total. The best soldiers and Marines the world has ever seen, he said. In total, there are 20 U.S. maneuver companies currently on the ground with about 4,500 troops, and the flow continues. Plus the U.S. Navy and Air Force, multiple squadrons of F-18s, 88s, F-16s, AC-130s, B-52s, and Marines. Significant amount of rotary wing aviation on the ground, including attack and lift helicopters, working with our allies and partners, the British Special Forces on the ground, as well as Turkish security forces and others and international special operatives. And all I have to say is that all of these so-called civilized people cannot deal with a bunch of very backward, you know, 10th century people who are living in tribalism. We are being utterly defeated by people who don't have any of these things, none of this equipment, none of this sophisticated anything. We've just been beaten to hell by these people, these great warrior fighters, tribal fighters. So, I just had to laugh at this general.
But the Biden administration left them all of their equipment. They left them everything there. How convenient.
Yes, but you know, I have to put a little footnote on that. You see, the problem is they won't have any replacement parts. And these people will, these things are all just going to, you can't imagine. There's a saying in Afghanistan that the Afghan people can screw up a one-car parade. So this equipment is not going to fare well under these people's hands. They're going to find a lot of this stuff rusting out in the desert. It is a total waste of yours and my hard-earned money. We paid for all that equipment that's now been abandoned and just going to go into, you know, rust and disuse.
Yes, but right now it's brand new equipment that American taxpayers paid billions of dollars for.
Right. But these people won't know how to operate it. They won't know what to do with half of it. You know, it's very sophisticated stuff.
Well, they got a bunch of drones out of it. They got a lot of our armored cars. They got a ton of guns and ammunition.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wish they didn't have any of that. I'm not sure that we couldn't have pulled out of Afghanistan in a much better way, where we kind of made preparations to get the people out that needed to be out. So had we done it in a way that we got our people out, that we were able to get our allies out, because I think it's despicable that we have left people like our translators there who have begged to be out for a very long time, and we would not give them any kind of amnesty or any kind of even to take them to another country, even just to get them out of there and save their lives. And we did nothing to help.
It really bothers me. Cruel. It's so cruel. It's so cruel. And we could have done it. Absolutely, we could have done it. We're very well-organized people, generally Americans. I don't see any reason why we didn't do this step by step, point by point. My heart goes out to these people. I can't tell you how frightened I am for them. For the first two nights, I couldn't sleep at all. I'm thinking of these poor people waiting in their houses for people to just come and murder them now. I'm horrified. And you know, you guys, nobody is ever going to trust us again. Now, it was bad enough that this happened in Vietnam. It was bad enough. But now, this is it. We're toast. We're toast.
In defense for President Trump, he stated in his own words, this is not his plan. His plan was to take out the American people's first and the people that he promised first to take out, and military was to come out last. So I know he would have included those people in that.
Absolutely. We all know that Donald Trump would have done it a completely different way. He's a man who really knows how to organize. I mean, my gosh, he has these rallies. There are 50,000 people show up, 30,000 people. He handles the whole thing in the middle of all kinds of COVID and everything else. He's a genius at organizing things and getting things well done. And I'm so heartbroken. I mean, I'm just absolutely.
This was definitely done on purpose.
Yes, yes.
Oh, but see, why? To what end? Why would we do this on purpose this way? China and also Russia are using this as propaganda now with their people, to saying, see, you can't trust the United States.
Exactly.
And don't forget, you know, China is in their own so-called war with people like Hong Kong who, you know, want their freedom. And now they're sending them notes and messages and saying, hey, you don't want to deal with these guys because you can't trust them.
Well, I still say Obama is behind this. I will stand to this day. I will say that he is clearly behind us. This happened in Yemen, and he is doing the exact same thing here.
Definitely. You're absolutely right. I don't think there's any question that this is what's going on. And by the way, I'd really like people to check this out for me, because I have seen in several places that there was a meeting between the Chinese and the Taliban on July 28th. The Chinese met with the Taliban on July 28th. And then this happens, what, 12 days later? How many days later?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
They had a big meeting between them. Now, and you say to yourself, well, why do all these Americans want America to fail? Why are they behind Biden? Why are they behind this open border to the South? What is going on? But you must never forget, you see, and we have a tendency to do it. I do too sometimes. It's the one world order.
Exactly.
You see, they're trying to create the OWO. And the more they can break down our sovereignty, destroy the, so that there is no United States of America anymore.
Exactly.
That's what they really want to have happen.
Exactly. And China wants to be the dominant one. So why not?
Yeah. Well, they're pretty much running the show. They run the WHO, the World Health Organization, and we're all running around obeying the World Health Organization's regulations. So we're really being mastered by China already in America. You know, and people are more masked up today than they were a week ago in New York City. I don't know what's happening. All of a sudden, they're all back in their double masks again now, and it's just a horror to watch. I'm not wearing a mask at all anywhere.
I'm not wearing a mask. A mask does nothing but destroy your immune system.
We have the Delta, the Delta variant out there. And I actually know a lot of people right now who were vaccinated both times and have COVID with this new variant. Now, are they dying? No. Are they in the hospital? No. But they are getting it. So, you know, for me, I'm going to live my life. But I'm watching this train wreck that is happening in Afghanistan every day. And it's just heartbreaking to see what these people have to go through. And I really feel for these, especially the young women, but also the young men that have never known anything but our military there. And these young women have been able to work, have been able to go to school. They've been able to, you know, have a different kind of life than you experienced, Mallory, in 1967. And now they're going to kind of go back to the Stone Ages. Not that Afghanistan has ever come out of the Stone Ages, but they're going to go back to it. And it's just, you know, the generals that have given the advice, or whoever has been giving the advice to the president on this, is, I mean, how could they possibly ignore all of the military, actually the military generals and the people that said, don't do it this way, this will be a disaster. And yet they did. Anybody, okay, the three of us and anybody listening with any common sense would know that this would be a disaster. How could somebody that was elected as the president of our United States be so completely wrong and have so many people being murdered in the streets? You see the videos all day, every day. They walk up to people and they just murder them, because in order to get out of Afghanistan at this time, you have to have paperwork that says that you are, you know, somebody that maybe helped the Americans, or you have this authority to get out. If you have that paperwork, that's a death sentence to you. So it's a catch-22. You can't get out and you can't stay in. And it's just tragic. This is absolutely tragic. There's got to be a better answer than this. And the answer was not sending 6,000 of our troops, after pulling them out, back there to go help people get out. That's not the answer. The answer was not to leave in this way, and not to have the Taliban, you know, overrun the country in a heartbeat after Joe Biden said that that would not happen.
Well, and you can bet that those young women who did get this taste of freedom, many of them young men and women, because the boys are very mistreated there too. There's another phenomenon that I didn't bring up, and then I've forgotten the word for it. There's a word for it. Oh, gosh, I wish I could remember what it is. It starts with C, I think. A lot of times in Afghanistan, you'll see an older man walking with a young boy, hand in hand with a 6 or 7 year old boy. And I always would think that that was their grandson or their son or something, until I was filled in. Oh no, that's his, whatchamacallit. I forgot the word. I knew that word so well. That's his, no, that's the little boy that he, it's very popular in Afghanistan for grown men to have these little boys that they use for sexual purposes. So the young boys are preyed upon by the older men, and the women are preyed upon by the older men. So I'm sure that the boys and girls that have grown up in these last 21 years have had a taste of freedom that, you know, they liked. They must have relished, you know, just like those people in Tehran who were so ebullient and buoyant in their freedom. These people, there's going to be a problem in Afghanistan after we're gone, because there's going to be a chafing now. There's going to be some sort of division, although they seem to have covered over that nicely in Iran. And I don't know, they may be, you know, totalitarianism is a very powerful thing. You know, people just get so they don't, are afraid to open their mouths anymore. They're not going to say anything anymore. So I hope that maybe we planted seeds of freedom and seeds of common sense and of maybe wanting to be really hyper hygienic and highly civilized people. I don't know. I'm hoping that maybe something like that has been germinated, but you just don't know.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, it's going to be really interesting to watch. a part of me wonders if there was enough young people that they will rebel against this. I can't imagine that they would want to go back to this. Not that they've ever been there, but I can't imagine that they would want to change their lives that way. But their parents who have been there through that are going to know, and they're going to say, you know, if you rebel, they're going to cut your head off. So, you know, it's such a lost country. It truly is a lost country. It seems like it got stuck in time and just stays that way. And they use their religion as a reason for their cruelty and abuse of others and their power. That is not what religion does. That's not the definition of religion. So they just use it and abuse it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's a sadomasochistic world there. And it's not as if they, you know, they got left behind or they didn't. They live in such isolation there. They're not even really, up until now, I suppose a lot of them are now because of all of our armed forces have been over there. But by the time I had been there, the Russians had just lost a war there at the time, and they had left in defeat. And I think that, you know, they live in an isolated world there. So it isn't as if they know about the civilized world and miss it. They don't even, they're completely oblivious to how we live and who we are and what we are, you know. These people in these villages all over Afghanistan, they're not even aware of what they're missing, not even remotely. And, you know, it's thousands of years of living like this. So for them, there's a certain area of comfort, you know. I mean,
Robin, what advice would you give to Joe Biden right now?
Resign and go to Elba. Resign and go hide out in an island somewhere like Napoleon. Go to Elba.
Tell the truth. Who really won the 2020 election?
No, I mean, come on. When Trump had, did you see that rally he had a few weeks ago? I don't know if it was Kansas. I can't remember where it was, but 100,000 people showed up for the rally.
Exactly.
They could only let 20,000 to 30,000 in, but 100,000. Now, within about 4 days, Biden had a thing at a high school auditorium, and it wasn't even a third filled. Now, you're telling me that this man won the election? It's preposterous. Everybody
exactly
knows it.
Exactly. The whole world knows who won. That's why they're laughing.
When you have another 2 or 3 million people coming over the border this year, and then you add them to the 20 or 30 million that we already have, that he wants to give amnesty to everybody. The whole idea is so that they never lose an election again. That is the whole plan, and that's the whole idea. And he doesn't care that America is going down with it as we pay for all of these people's, you know, their medical and their bus fare and their airfare, and we give them stipends. And I mean, we're just acting crazy in this country. And as you said, people that are not from Mexico there's people from 148 countries coming over the border.
Yeah.
If you think that some of those are not from Afghanistan and Iran and some of these other places that mean us harm, then you're naive believe
but
that.
You know what? If they're, you know, the Democrats are trying to make this a communist country. Common sense here. If they're going to make the United States a communist country, this is just ludicrous. You're not going to have everything handed to you here for free.
No,
for
nothing's
long.
Free.
Exactly. It's not going to be free for long. You're going to go where you're leaving is going to be, if you're going to make this a communist country, what do you think is going to happen here? If you keep voting Democrat long, you're not going to have your freedom long. So keep voting Democrat.
What happens when you have a communist country
is
that you end up with this little tiny elite, and then the masses of millions and millions of people become slaves, complete and utter slaves.
Exactly.
And American people don't know this, that they're headed toward slavery.
Keep voting Democrat. It just shows who has common sense here.
There's a tiny light at the end of the tunnel here. I do worry about the amnesty for 30 million illegals. That will make a big difference. But I don't assume that they're all going to vote Democrat, but perhaps the majority will. I don't know. But in the special elections we have been having around the country, the Republicans have been taking Democrat seats in states. You know, there might be somebody that for some reason is out of office, whether they were ill or whether they passed away or whether they got convicted of something, who knows? And a special election has been held. And predominantly those races are going to Republicans right now because people are not liking what they see. So,
well, you know, yeah. I was raised on a phrase. My mother raised me on this, and boy, I've never clung to it more fiercely as I am right now because, you know, I'll tell you, this is the darkest I have ever seen it. I am 81 years old, and this is the darkest I have ever seen this world. We have a bad pope. We have a terrible president. We have a god-awful mayor in New York. We have god-awful mayors in all the big cities. It's dark, dark, dark. But my mother always taught me it's always darkest before the dawn. And that's mm-hmm. not just a cliche. That is a fact. It gets really dark just before the dawn. And I am just clinging to the idea that this dark, dark, darkness is going to turn into a spectacular dawn in some way or another. God is going to come through for us. I cannot believe he's abandoned us. I just can't. You know, he would never do that.
No.
Well, we can all hope, and that's what we have right now. As for the three of us, I think we all are sending prayers over to the people of Afghanistan. I'm so sorry that this is the way that this has all ended for them. I'm glad to have our boys home, but I think it was a very wrong way to go about this. And I think that the people of America really, really need to look, no matter who you voted for, at who the president is right now and wonder who's in control at the top.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.